The function of leadership is to produce more leaders, not more followers. Leaders of Men.
Welcome to Leaders of Men. I'm your host, Nick Warner. In a society that yearns for legitimate male role models, I speak to men that are forging the pathway to a healthy, integrated masculinity. Today, I have the honor of speaking with Philip Folsom. This week's guest has 30 years of leadership experience. He's an anthropologist and army veteran. He runs a consulting firm that integrates the wisdom of wolves into teams and organizations. He's the co-founder of the K4 Men's Group and leads trauma and resiliency work with veterans and first responders. This is a super powerful conversation that is filled with ancient wisdom. So this man is definitely one to follow and learn from. I hope you enjoy. All right, today's guest is Philip Folsom. Thank you for joining me, brother.
Happy to be here.
It's a real pleasure to get to speak to you and to find out a little bit more about you. I've been following the old Wolf Tribe for a while. So straight into it, what does masculinity mean to you?
Ooh, masculinity. Okay, this is a 30,000 foot question. I study anthropology and paleoanthropology. And so one of the dynamics with that is, masculine and feminine are polarities, and they're designed to be complementary, and they each have a specific sphere of control and influence. And in studying indigenous cultures, which I spent a lot of time doing, particularly around warrior transitions, ancient warrior transition rituals, in these indigenous cultures, women run the decision-making of the tribe. It's a matrilineal component that has to do with collaboration and logistics and resources. And women are still doing that today. It's within the home, whereas we really need it to be in our government, right? Now, masculinity, to get to your question, we have a different sphere of control. And ours is usually extra tribal, which means the things happening outside the tribe. So hunting, travel, exploration, defense, like there's a whole bunch of stuff that we do that's related to providing, protecting. And so masculinity, and this is cross species, fulfills those primary roles. Unfortunately, in our current culture, the masculinity has stopped being wild and it has become savage, which is an adolescent form of masculinity, which is what we're attempting to do with my men's group, is elevate the operating system into a mature masculine. And so that's where I'd start to answer your question of what is masculinity.
How much effect do you think a lack of rite of passage or initiation has on that?
Massive. It's central. We have always had an initiation process in every culture we've ever studied, except for ours. Similarly, we've also always had a warrior reintegration ritual. Every culture, you do a sweat lodge, a vision quest, you do your penances. After war, you heal your soul. Yeah. And for the rest of us veterans who have dealt with trauma, we have no warrior reintegration rituals. And all of us men are uninitiated men, which means we're still running off of an adolescent operating system, which means you're the center of the fucking world, right? As a little boy, you're the precious little prince. And the reality is that you're not the center of the world. We're built to serve. So maybe to put a point on question number one, what is masculinity? Service. That's what masculinity is. Serving something bigger than yourself, which is the tribe or the women or the children or your community, whatever that is. Initiation is what brings that to a point, is that you the prince has to die for the king to be born. And that process is the destruction of an old operating system, which is a death, right? That's the crucifixion before the resurrection. It's the burning of the phoenix before she's reborn. So initiation is always a very robust, sometimes even a violent process, because there is a death involved, a ritual scarring, knock a tooth out. There's a process that happens. And it's been lost in almost every aspect of our culture, except for the military, professional sports, a really unusual kind of standalone honor-based cultures. But the rest of our pride-based world has no initiation ritual, which is why you see so many men who are just cratering into a spiral of video games and porn and addiction and anxiety and ultimately suicide, which is the ultimate response to a life without meaning. We only get meaning through service.
That is a quote right there. The ultimate response to a life without meaning.
Meaning is the only thing that makes suffering palatable, manageable, sustainable. Meaning is it. And if you have not been initiated, it's very hard to find meaning with continually just elevating yourself. It doesn't matter how much money you have, what kind of car you have, how many abs you have. It will not provide meaning. It's like a short-term sugar buzz. Like real legit meaning comes from serving something larger than yourself. Always. Yeah. That's just a historical and psychological truth. And uninitiated men have a very heavy lift finding that connection.
That's a solid answer. Thank you for that. If you had a 12-year-old son, what is the most significant thing he needs to know?
Let's see. I look at life through a lens, like we all do. We're continually shaping our reality lens and polishing it and hopefully making sure that it's giving us as much of a valuable perspective on the world as possible. So I refer to mine as a series of maps. And the maps that I have been excavating from the depths of time are what I would teach my 12-year-old son. And there seems to be three big primary master maps, and you're going to know most of these from the field you're studying. But the hero's journey is the first one. It is the map that illuminates our universal human engagement with the unknown. And it encodes all of the elder wisdom that, you know, my son would need to navigate his life, which is, you know, answer the call, find your allies, surrender to supernatural aid, push through the abyss. Like, there's a whole sequence of things that he wouldn't understand except in the context of this sports season or this hard class or this relationship with his friends or whatever it is. But unlocking that would be number one. Number two would be informing him and empowering him with those four masculine archetypes of the king, the warrior, the magician, and the lover that gives us the versatility of behavior that drives adaptability. And adaptability is the superpower of humanity, is the ability to intentionally respond to situations. So through those two master maps, which are the hero's journey and the archetypes of behavior, I would attempt to continually reinforce and encourage him to explore who he is, where he wants to go, and then most importantly, who he needs to be to get there.
It's quite fascinating that you use those two. As I went on my own hero's journey and kind of was coming to the end of it and everything was beginning to make sense, I came across the book King Warrior Magician Lover, and it was just like, it was like the tapestry of life. It was, oh shit, that makes sense now. That's the shadow that I've been living in, and that's what I was missing, and this is where I needed to step up in this. And to have that understanding as a child or as an adolescent was, that's some profound wisdom to carry.
Yeah. It's the four houses of Hogwarts. It's the characters in the Avengers. It's Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's encoded in all of our mythology. It's just been layered in the same way that Iron John has been buried in the dark waters of our subconscious. The information is still there. It's just we put a load of shit on top of it.
What is your deepest desire?
Deepest desire is to bring our kinship system back into the world. And I think the kinship and the word kin is the root of the word kind. And this is what makes us inherently human. And when we look at each other as an extension of ourselves, then psychologically that changes how we respond and react to each other. And that's the kind of the guiding light of tribe, if you will. It's what made us human. It's altruism, reciprocity, are one of the oldest markers of culture. It's not pottery and tools and cave paintings. It's when you see in the fossil record, healed bones. That's reciprocity. It means I didn't let you die when it would have been easier, because you're an extension of me. Like, I need you. The strength of the wolf is the pack, and the strength of the pack is the wolf. So kinship is altruism. It's reciprocity. It's understanding that we're bigger than just a bunch of individuals floating through time and space trying to leave a mark. We're bigger than that. And that's our kinship systems. And it has been slowly eroded since agriculture, which is probably a bigger answer than what you wanted. But we've lost our honor-based culture or operating system, and it's been replaced by pride-based culture, which is central about the individual. Whereas all other indigenous cultures, it's always about the community, the tribe. All through Africa, they Ubuntu, which means I am because we are. And this is what I have been probably pushing the last 20 years of my career in my consulting work. You know, yes, I want my clients to make more money and have more retention and, you know, all those things. But really, I want them to have a kinship system, because people's careers are never just careers. People spend the majority of their life working, and yet they say that's just work, or that's just my coworkers. And I just want to go, oh no, you've lost the game. We need to have meaning and fulfillment and thriving and kinship at work. And that is inherently not just what you do, but it's who you do it with and the relationships you have with those people. So if we want to fully dig into why this is important, the biggest thing that's crippling our species right now is this central topic of, I'm the most important thing in the world. It's how many followers I have. It's my platform and my money and whatever the story is. And when an individual feels isolated, like it's just them, it triggers a death response in our amygdala. We release a lot of cortisol. I mean, it really has this cascading effect of anxiety and depression and addiction. So kinship is just the word that kind of drops somewhere in the middle of that conversation. And I think it goes a long ways to, being the force multiplier or the big master lever that changes a huge amount of our legacy on planet Earth.
Well, yeah, one of the biggest killers of men is loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's because of inflammation. It's not just suicide. Suicide is number 10, depending on the age range.
Mm.
And over 65, all of a sudden now you're bumped up into, it's a pretty scary number. We're up at about an increase, I think 38% increase over the last 10 years in suicide. 85% of suicides are males. And since the World Trade Center bombings here in 9/11, we've lost just under 7,000, the American Army has lost under 7,000 troops to combat. In that same period of time, we've lost over 150,000 soldiers to suicide. So it's massive. But even that is just the tip of the iceberg compared to the amount of inflammation, which is driven by cortisol, of loneliness. Diabetes, inflammation. Cancer, inflammation. Heart disease, inflammation. I mean, inflammation is partly lifestyle related because of all the shit we're eating. But loneliness is a massive one. You take a pack animal and you isolate them, and you can just watch the death spiral happen. Yeah. And I do a lot of work with wolf rescues and rehabilitations. And you can't take a pack animal and put them in the backyard and not have them crater. So that kinship is my one word response to that huge conversation.
Powerful. What is an uncomfortable truth?
An uncomfortable truth. There is always going to be discomfort behind every sacrifice. Everything great, everything excellent, everything that is meaningful is going to require an uncomfortable sacrifice. And it's never going to end. And that's very uncomfortable. People are not afraid of failure, which is kind of the tagline of like why people aren't following their dreams and committing to their passions. Like, well, I don't know if I can. Like, yeah, you do. You absolutely know if you can. What you're afraid of is not failure. You're afraid of what success is going to require from you. And you know it's going to be the death of an old story. You're going to fucking suffer and be uncomfortable. And that's the adult operating system. That's why initiation is so important, is that you need to surrender comfort to be an adult, to be a parent, to be an entrepreneur. To be of service means that you are going to be uncomfortable the rest of your life. That's an uncomfortable truth.
Yeah, it reminds me that that Marianne Williamson quote, our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate, our greatest fear is that we are more powerful beyond measure because of the work it will take to fulfill your total potential.
Yes. And the only thing she doesn't say in that is to be able to claim your power without measure is going to require endless, ongoing, uncomfortable sacrifice. Because everything sacred is going to require something that you wish you had now for that commitment to have something better in the future. Every decision, and the word side, like suicide or homicide, it means cut or kill in Latin. So, you know, when I decide to do whatever I'm going to do in my life, I'm killing off all those other options. You know, that's an uncomfortable truth, is that's being an adult. That's being a man, is being able to be the great decider of your life. It's not your dad. It's not the government. It's nobody else's fault at our age of how the world is and how our lives are. That's an uncomfortable truth.
Got that right. What is your most profound pain in this moment?
A profound pain. I think probably the most immediate one for me is, and this is from, I think I can corroborate this from most of the men who are watching this, is a feeling of inadequacy. And this anchors back to the lack of initiation. Boys are inadequate things. We are inadequate. And we need to be taken care of, and we need to be domesticated, because we're just a bunch of, you know, little savages. And so there's boundaries, and you know, you can't do certain things, and like there's a inadequacy story when you're a boy. And if you have not been initiated, then you get to carry that little burden through, you know, through the rest of your life of being crippled by, you can call it imposter syndrome, or I'm not ready, procrastination, resistance, addiction, whatever the stories, the way it shows up in your language and in your life, inadequacy sits at the core of it. And it anchors back to that boy psychology. And that's a tough one to carry as and you know, this echo in the back of our lives. And I see it being one of the core wounds of our time.
Is it a wound for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. There's a constant question of who am I to be on this show talking about men's work? Who am I to, nobody told me that I have permission to do this. Who am I to, you know, do any of those things? I'm not prepared. I'm not strong. I'm not smart. I'm a poser. I'm a charlatan. I'm all of those things. And that's, you know, that's there. And then continually having to go, thank you for that. And now daddy's got it. You know, thanks for that. I hear you. Good job. But now you can sit down because daddy's got this now. But that's a continual lift. And I can't just take that little boy and put him in a box. Like, oh, I don't want to talk about him anymore, because he's there. Yeah. Right? He's there. In the same way that your trauma and, you know, your old stories and your wounds, I mean, they're there. So if you try to bury it, it's coming out in some maladaptive way. And ideally, you want to take all that, those challenges and wounds and pain, and you want to have it in front of you so that it doesn't possess us. And that's really the part of the wild man conversation in the book Iron John. Is claiming and naming those things, those wounds, as a source of gold and genius, which is the inspiration, right? The spirit entering us. It comes into us through those wounds. Like, that's our pain. And it's the reason why I am who I am. And it's the reason why I can speak with wisdom and authority and competence on these things, is because directly because of those wounds. So I'd never want them to go away. And they won't. I can integrate the shadow, to quote Carl Jung. Yeah. Every tree's branches that reach to heaven, its roots reach to hell. And so I want to go as deep as I can into my roots, and because I have great things that I I aspire to do.
Yeah, the pain is the source of our greatest medicine, isn't it? But for so long, the discomfort just keeps us sheltered from it.
Yep.
When was the last time you were out of integrity?
Last time I was out of integrity. I continually, one of the lenses that I personally and all the men in K4, and K4 refers to King of the Four Houses, which are those four archetypes we were talking about. So the king, the warrior, the magician, the lover, they're kind of the big pillars of any life. I have done really good work with, you know, my expressive king, my competence and power as a warrior. I'm actually pretty good now, even with my intimacy and my authenticity. My Achilles heel is my magician, which is my plan, process, procedure, details. And I have been failing. And I mean a clean fail, which is not like, when I get to that, like that's usually the story of people like, hey, well, when I really commit to, you know, getting in shape, then it's going to be a different story, because people don't really want to commit, because then what if you fail? Then you know you're not enough. So they always keep some in the tank. I've actually been leaning pretty hard into my magician of my writing goals, my daily, my planning and my time blocking, and I've been failing. And, you know, I can forgive myself, and I can realize this is a long game, but it's quite a thing to actually commit to something and commit to it publicly, to, you know, all those, you know, men who are, they're part of my journey and I'm part of their journey. And they know I'm working on stuff, and I have my accountability calls, and I fail. That's you know, that's a chance. That's a thing, and it's on me. It's 100% on my my character, my current operating system, humanity stuff is right there, revealed. Like pulling the tablecloth off and go, oh, that table, that's kind of busted up. It's like, yeah, working on it.
One of the traits of the magician is to go out and to seek knowledge and wisdom and to bring it back and to share it amongst his peers. So I wouldn't say your magician's fully out of integrity.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of honor in just owning it. Mm-hmm. Like, and I, you know, of like, yeah, I fell short. Like I failed cleanly. Mm-hmm. However, there is that little, you know, I had things that I could have done and I didn't do them. And I knew it. Like I'm 50, almost 54. So I'm smart. And I've got some miles on me, and I know when I haven't done the things I should have done. I mean, when the day's over, I know I should be building my the next day. I should be time blocking, and I should be more organized. And I'm like, you know, I'll figure that out. Shit. I know where I dropped the ball, and I, in the same way that we all know what we should be eating and not eating. And all y'all men watching, you know what you should not be watching, whether it be, you know, shitty social media streams, porn, conspiracy bullshit. Like, you know that there's that when we're out of integrity and we still do it. So there's a tension there. And it's really tough in this era, because we have immediate and like biochemically engineered distraction sources. Tough. You know, like we can dial up fast food, porn, every visual distraction that we want to have, you know, on our phones. There it is. Like, yeah, so it's an arms race. It really is. It's an arms race between that versus the amount of wisdom that we also now have available. Like, everybody knows about meditation. Everybody knows about, you know, healthy lifestyles and diets. Everybody knows about the benefits of breath work and cold water and community. Like, we know. So it's an arms race against our shadow and our gold as a species.
Yeah, that's the integrity with yourself and your own word. And sure, you can be in integrity. You say you're going to do something to somebody and you can do it, but it's the little things that you say to yourself. I'm going to watch my weight. I'm going to work out in the morning. I'm going to get to bed early. And it's those little things where you shift on. I find those to be the more powerful ones, because once you start to lose trust with your own word, it's a slippery slope.
Yep. We surrender our sovereignty.
What are you most afraid of?
Fear. I am currently at the point in my life with the experience level that I have, that I've calibrated a direction or an azimuth. Like, I know where I'm going. I know what it's going to take to get there. I mean, I've been doing this work for 30 years. Like, I've been doing active applied leadership work, men's work, and, you know, for 30 years. I know it really well. And so I've kind of gotten to this point where I know a fairly optimized path for me. And this has to do with, you know, my career and my fitness and my relationships, all those pieces. The fear is, will I be able to maintain it? And obviously the more complex, elegant, exalted, clean our systems get, the harder it is to maintain them, because all systems tend towards disorder, and it's known in science as entropy. So the moment you take the gas off, you know, or the maintenance commitments off of a life, it erodes, it degrades, it collapses. And you can see this in sports. You know, to play at a championship level, it takes a tremendous amount of just focus, energy to maintain that. That's why people have a hard time staying at that really high level at any capacity in life. And that's kind of where, you know, I'm getting to in certain aspects of my life. And my fear is that I won't be able to maintain it. You know, because the awakening process is irreversible. Once you start this, once you've experienced something, really tough to go back. In fact, it might be almost impossible to go back with satisfaction. And so that's, I think, where my fear is at this point, is not being able to maintain this level of output and performance on an ongoing basis long enough that I can get cruising altitude, you know, and start moving the diligent, time intensive practices into just habits, right? Which are very efficiency based. So that's probably my big fear currently, because boy, I don't want to be living with the regrets. I don't want to, you know, for at my age and my experience level, it's either, you know, fuck yeah or hell no. And I can no longer abide like, well, I'll get to it. Whatever. I'll get in shape next year. Like, there is no next year. Like this is go time. And I don't want to have any regrets. So this time next year, my life is radically different and it will continue until I decide to not be on the field anymore. And then I'll just watch y'all perform amazing feats, all the next generation.
What is it you are creating?
I'm creating kinship systems. This is the thing that I most want to do. And this is happening at multiple different levels. And it has multiple delivery vehicles. K4 is my most immediate one, which is a men's group that's built around creating a container for men to not only grow, but move through a rite of passage and continually elevate their operating system, which then leads them to be able to serve and reclaim our kinship systems. My consulting company, Wolf Tribe, same thing. It's all about that, you know, for me. And the same thing with my family, you know, and the rest of the house. It's my neighbors outside. It's all about that at this point in my life. It seems to be the fabric of our society, our species, our reality that has been torn, you know. Maybe a better analogy is I can see the potential of this beautiful stained glass window, and we're all individual little pieces of colorful glass floating around wondering why we don't have meaning or purpose or an understanding of any larger thing. It's because we're supposed to be, you know, synergistically operating together to do something that's exalted and sacred and profound. So that's what I'm creating.
What would you like to be known for?
I would like to be known for re-implementing some of the most ancient wisdom sources that we have as a species. And all of these things are just like mythology itself. It's not literal and it's not linear. It's metaphoric. So when we talk about, you know, the hero's journey, and we talk about the archetypes or kinship, or these things are still in our society. They're still part of this, and we're still expressing and exploring what they mean. They just have lost their guidance role, right? We're creatures that are aware of self and we're aware of time. This is uniquely human. And that's the recipe, obviously, for anxiety and depression. They're like, holy shit, what am I doing? What about the future? And what about the past? Like, that's anxiety and depression. And, you know, and that's a bummer. But it also allows us to be hopeful, right? And to learn and to be intentionally respond to the world and create something that's a legacy. And so all of these really ancient systems that people relied on. And I don't know when the last time you went out and in the dark of night, but looked at the stars and went like, oh, wow. You know, not on your phone, but like actually looked at the stars and realized that that's what we did. You know, we really explored story and meaning and stuff that was bigger. And those bigger things, I like the word significance. Things were more significant. And the more distraction and the more comfortable we get, then the more insignificant our day-to-day things often behave. Of, you know, how many likes did I get on that post? That, who gives a shit, really? It doesn't matter. But it's very tough. It's hard to be able to say no to those very loud but insignificant things, to be able to commit and say yes to something else bigger. And I really hope that, you know, that I'm remembered as that.
That point about the stars, I was at Machu Picchu a couple of years ago, and there's this tiny little, it's almost like an oven pan shaped reflection pool, just a couple of inches deep. And they held such reverence for the stars that they would look at the stars through the reflection in the water. And it just brings you back when you can stand outside and you can look up at the stars and realize how small. I went for a walk along the beach the other day, and there's this idea that there are more stars in the universe than there are grains of sand on all the oceans of all the beaches in the world. And it shifts your perspective. Like, how many likes did you get? Who fucking cares? Like, it's a beautiful,
yeah.
It's a really beautiful coming back and like tuning into what is truly important.
Yeah, I got to work with the Maasai in Kenya a couple years ago. Similar thing. You know, little like Maasai boys who are running, you know, 8 years old or however old, running giant herds of cattle on the Mara with lions, and there's a zebra with a broken leg, and is the veterinarian coming? It's like, no, they get eaten that night, and then like that's reality. To know that that's been our reality for, you know, a quarter of a million years, and it's a bigger and more robust and profound experience that life consists of than the shallow version of our current society, where and of course people are clamoring for meaning and purpose and all these code words of simply living fully. And Campbell really puts a point on it when he says that the hero's journey doesn't exist to save the world, but you go on the journey to save yourself. But in doing so, you save the world because the influence of a vital person vitalizes. And so the hero's journey is not to return with, you know, the Holy Grail. You are the Holy Grail. Your life is your Holy Grail. Whatever the sacredness of that is, and your career should be sacred. Your relationship should be sacred. The way you take care of yourself should be sacred. And those are all quests that you're going to have to, you know, commit to, and there's going to be sacrifices along the way, and they're designed to be transformational. Anyway.
Final question. What would you love for men to know with every fiber of their being?
Let's see. Good questions. These are good questions. What do I want men to know? So many options. Like, just one thing.
Me too.
The one thing. that they're important. And I mean that in many different ways, but they are, they're seen and they're appreciated, and we need you. And the Kipling phrase of the strength of the wolf is the pack and the pack is the wolf. This is us. We need you to be healthy. In fact, I'm going to go further than need. We require you to commit to your growth, your vitality, your health, your education, your healing, your empowerment, because you have an important thing to do. You're important, and what you're doing is important. And you have to be as good as you can be so you can do as much good as you can. That's the cycle. And you're not alone. You're part of something that is bigger than yourself. And that's one of the core truths of humanity, but certainly masculinity. We have isolated to a catastrophic degree, which, you know, women seem to be able to collaborate and commiserate and all the rest of the things that they do. Men, I have an analogy that just in the similar way that energy cannot travel through a vacuum, because energy always travels in waves. So sound stops in space, right? There's no sound in space. Men are like that too. And unless we have projects, we have our relationship energy wave stops. And it's just that's the nature of the beast. And one of my mentors, Dr. Steven Johnson from the LA Men's Center, probably 20 years ago, said, if you remove alcohol, booze, right, and sports and your job, men don't have friends. So I would just throw that gauntlet down that that's not enough. If you're looking at your community as, you know, alcohol, sports, and your job, you know, you've missed a much larger kinship conversation, which again comes back to service and growth and service.
That's a powerful way to end. Thank you, Phil. That's
right on, man. Super fun.
Potent wisdom right there. Just before you go, could you let everybody know what you're offering, what you've got going on as far as your groups and your Wolf Tribe and things?
Yeah, cool. So two big primary brands or services or expressions that I have in the world, and they're both sitting right there. K4 is my men's group, and it's international. It consists of a 13-week rite of passage, which is all online with with small group accountability, calls, curriculum. It's a really, really, it's the product of my whole career poured into that 13 weeks. And if you are an uninitiated man who is kind of in that lone wolf status of your life, this just might save your ass and certainly upgrade your operating system. And so the website is k4men.com. Check it out. And then my consulting company is Wolf Tribe, and Wolf Tribe takes those ancient lessons of the wolves, which is collaboration, reciprocity, and healthy conflict, all the things that make us inherently human, we share with the wolves. In fact, we might have actually learned them from the wolves. So Wolf Tribe is my consulting company. I do a lot of work online now because we're in that era. But when things open back up again, I actually bring organizations out to a wolf sanctuary and you get to spend a day with the wolves. So those are the two things. And the website for Wolf Tribe is mywolftribe.com.
I'll have all that info on the site. Thank you so much, brother. That was really, really powerful. And
sweet.
Yeah, super stoked to have that chat.